here.
I got it. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, welcome back to the Hagman and Hagman Report. Again, don't be alarmed. Don't adjust your dial. Don't refresh your YouTube page. Doug and Joe are safe and sound at the Awaken to the Shaken conference, and my name is Stephen Menking. I'm here with Randall Terry, and it's an incredible privilege to welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report for the very first time a debut guest, Chuck Kappas. How are you doing, Chuck? Are you with us?
Yeah, Steve, good to hear your voice. Good to talk to both of you this evening.
Oh, it's great to have you, Chuck. Let me just bring you in a little bit. So for the readers who might not be familiar, Chuck Kappas is the founder and president of IDP Consulting Group, an independent precious metals and consulting firm that assists clients with pension fund rollovers, commercial storage, and physical delivery of precious metals. And we'll talk about that. Has a business background in sales and marketing, almost 40 years. He's been licensed securities broker and featured guest on national radio programs. He's currently the host of The Reckoning Hour, monthly podcast covering current affairs and economics. And, you know, Chuck, it's just a pleasure to meet and run into another economist in the field who's looking at things through the lens of biblical prophecy. America's Financial Reckoning Day is the book I'm holding up here for the audience to see, Chuck. And what's really interesting about this book is that it's talking about, you know, how you can survive America's monetary and political decline in the 21st century. And it was written in 2007, so this is pre-financial crisis. So Chuck is no Johnny come lately, and he's been on the scene for quite some time talking about incredibly important topics. And so, you know, Chuck, it's an awesome privilege to have you here. So with that being said, what's on your mind to start us out with?
Well, first of all, I want to say hi to Randall Terry. Is he on the air with us right now?
I'm here, Chuck. Hi. Yeah, Chuck, I'm here. Forgive me. I've just been listening. Good to be with you as well, sir.
Yeah, and, you know, I was involved in Operation Rescue, and we remember that back in the 80s and stuff, and it was a delight to see you're still around and still fighting in the culture wars here, Randall.
How fun. Where were you participating? What cities, Chuck?
That was in Phoenix, Arizona.
Unbelievable. Well, did we ever have the pleasure of meeting? I've only been out to Phoenix a couple times.
No, I might have heard you somewhere, but one thing I remember in those culture wars was just how ugly the left, the progressive, the liberal mindset is, and very intolerant. You can't reason with them, and look where we've come to now, you know. And James Burnham once said that the only difference between a communist and a liberal is a communist knows what he's doing.
That's funny. Well, it's a delight to be with you, brother, and I look forward to hearing what you have to say.
Yeah, thank you.
So Chuck, let's go ahead.
Well, go ahead, Steve, and I was going to defer to you because I've been listening in a little bit to what you've been saying here.
All right. Well, one of the things that I think is going to be really synergistic here, going to flow quite nicely, is that, Chuck, you're one of the rare people who, in a book about America and financial collapse and other sorts of structures, is actually going to bring in some substantive content about Islam. What's the connection? You know, how do you see Islam today and in the context of your book?
Well, as we just said, I mean, if you think you have problems in left-wing progressive culture wars and where we've come to today, just look at Islam, which is, frankly, it's an ideology. It's, I think Michael Savage calls it Islamofascism masquerading as a religion, because it's really a theocracy. They want to impose there's no distinction in Sharia law. It's theocracy, and it's they have to have a religious society, and there's no compromising there at all. And they want minority rights here in the U.S. and in Europe and everything else. They want minority rights. They want to put labels on food and be allowed to have everything else. You try to do that over in Saudi Arabia. You try to do that in Morocco or somewhere else. You're not going to be able to do that. So it's a very – what can you say about Islam? You know, it's – let me read a quote here, and this is by a gentleman. He wrote a book called The Sword of the Prophet by Serge Trifkovic, and he said, "Islam is a collective psychosis seeking to become global, and any attempt to compromise with such madness is to become part of the madness itself. No one who believes that jihad is the right or duty of all Muslims should be allowed to settle in any Western country." And that's what I just said about they can't be culturally assimilated. I addressed this in my book as I related it to the petrodollar and the House of Saud. That was a deal struck back in the 1970s and sustains our bond market for the better part, recycling our bonds and dollars around the world as the reserve currency of the world, which will not be sustained or last much longer. That's a general theme in my book. But that involves Wahhabism and then all the distinctions of the Sunnis and Shiites. It gets very confusing throughout the Middle East with these
Randall, can you jump in here and talk a little bit to this? Just because those kind of distinctions is something that you've spent a lot of time with. How does this come into play and what's the connection here?
I will, but first I want to tell Chuck, in case he doesn't know, and I can double dip and tell the viewers. Chuck, since you and I hung out together in the 80s and early 90s, I went back to school and went to a military university and got a master's degree in diplomacy and international terrorism. And my master's research was, the preponderance of it, the majority of it, was on Islamic terrorism and Islam. So I've been studying the words and the deeds of Muhammad, the founder of Islam, for years, literally thousands and thousands of hours reading Sharia law, the Quran, and more importantly, the Hadith, Sahih Bukhari and Sahih Muslim, and the Sirah by Ibn Ishaq, which is the foundation of Islam. That is Islam. And for the sake of the viewer who might have missed something that Chuck said that no one who believes that jihad is the duty of all Muslims should be admitted into America. And what Chuck was alluding to was that Sharia law, or Sharia law, depending on how you want to pronounce it, Sharia law specifically states that jihad is the duty of every able-bodied male. It says that if any Muslim knows this and they don't try and do a jihad, or at least express a desire to do a jihad, is guilty of sin. And Muhammad said that somebody who does not do it, participate in jihad or express the desire to do so, that Muslim dies the death of a hypocrite, which means, in Muslim terminology, it means that they're going to hell. They are literally sentenced to hell because they either did not participate in the jihad or they didn't express a desire to do so. And Sharia law specifically states it is the duty of every able-bodied male. So we're in the West, we are asking the wrong questions. The question you ask a Muslim at the border is, do you believe in Sharia law? It's a yes-no question. If they say yes, we say, thank you so much for your honesty and for taking the time to be here. Your things are over there. Please pack them, and you'll be in that room waiting until the next transport can take you back to your country of origin. Because Sharia law is a knife to the throat of every Western constitution. Strike that. Sharia law is a knife to the throat of every constitution that is not based on Sharia law. That's simply it. So I deal with this at length in my new movie series called What Would Muhammad Do? And friends, I just encourage you to go and get it. Go to randallterry.com. You can watch the first episode for free. And if you like what you see, you can order it, one copy, four copies, whatever you want. And we will, for our Hagman viewers, if you say, hey, I saw Randall guest hosting on the Hagman show, we will give you a 9-part series on the Muslim Brotherhood, which is without question a terrorist organization. So go to randallterry.com, or also you can call up, we have an operator right now. Mike is waiting right now at 304-289-3700. That's 304-289-3700. So Chuck, I'm thrilled to hear you honing in on Islam, and you're absolutely right. We would long for the days when we could dance with the liberals if Sharia law takes precedence in our lives, because we'll be dead. Guys like us three, we're all dead. The Hagman father son team, they're dead, literally dead. They'll cut our heads off.
Right.
And with that great news, Chuck, how is this all connected? You know, it looks like in the EU, with this influx of Islam, that the demographics and everything is shifting so dramatically, and we see Le Pen and these French elections and potential for Italy to leave the Union and everything else like that. What are your views on that situation over there on that continent and how it compares to what's going on in the U.S.?
Yeah, let's get into that a little bit. One of the things culturally, first of all, is that Christianity is in retreat. Europe is a very secular continent, and Randall, you'd know that. You know, they've lost their Christian roots, and they can't confront a secular humanist worldview. Can't confront. Don't want to even talk about religion. Believes in the moral equivalency of religions, and so they can't even stand up to it from an apologetic, you know, perspective. And so these, you know, Muslims are immigrating, and I'm sure, as we like to always say, there's plenty of nice, moderate Muslims, but actually I call them all backsliders because they are told to go out and cut off heads, instill terror. In Surah 8:12 it says, fight and slay the pagans, Surah 9:5. So they're just being obedient. It would be like us saying, do unto others as you do unto others, as you'd have them do unto you. We'd be following the words of our Lord, Lord Jesus, and they're following Muhammad, which is a 6th century feudalist worldview that can't be integrated into modern democratic societies. Randall, I'm sure you're familiar with Kurt Wilders. He has permanent mm-hmm. bodyguards now. He's been trying to warn the Dutch people and all over the place. How much more is it going to take for these people to realize? Yeah, but fundamentally, spiritually, Europe is in a very dark state. Their cathedrals are empty museums. Church attendance is down. You know what I mean? Yep. So they don't, and we're going, yep. the U.S., we're going the same way as well, very much so.
Yes, what we have for us going is that we have a fairly vibrant evangelical world, and compared to Europe, and now this is going to shock some of the viewers, but compared to Europe, most of Europe, we have a vibrant Catholic world. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, a lot of the Catholic bishops in America are not doing a very bang-up job. But compare them to some of the bishops in Europe, in various European countries, and America is still like a beacon of hope for Christendom. And that's not saying much when you consider how stilted and how lukewarm we've become. So, God save us. I'm so happy to hear you talking about this. And I will say that in the Bible we see, because you ask yourself, how can it be that the liberals are so stupid? Really and truly, now think about it. Islam calls for the death, the execution of homosexuals. Let's just say that. Okay? Mm-hmm. Throw them off a building, cut their heads off. Muhammad said it. Muhammad himself, the founder of Islam, said, kill him who does it and him to whom it is done. So that's what motivated the guy in Orlando, Florida. He was following the exact dictates of Muhammad. So you would think that a liberal is going to say, you know, let me do a little research on this whole Islam thing. And it's tantamount in the Bible, the New Testament, to the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the Herodians. Those three sects in the days of Jesus, they hated each other. The Pharisees and the Sadducees and the Herodians hated each other, but they hated Jesus more. And they banded together to try and destroy Christ. And that's what I think, personally, is what's going on with the left-wing idiots in America and throughout Europe who just can't bring themselves to admit that on this one point, that Christianity is radically different than Islam. That Christianity really is a religion of love and suffering, and Islam really is a religion of death and the sword. They just can't bring themselves to admit it. So they would rather stand against Christ, stand against his church, and line up with Muslims.
Yeah, Randall, I've never heard a more, greater disconnect than referring to Islam as a religion of peace. That would actually be shalom. what they say is Islam, and that is submit or else we will cut your head off. They divide right. the whole world into Dar el-Islam, the House of Peace, or Dar el-Harb, the House of War. So unless you're submitted to them, you are on the balance, you're in the House of War, and that's going to be the case, and especially against the Jews, and this kind of goes back to Abraham, and it's not Abraham, Ishmael, and Muhammad, it's Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and did you know, that's in Genesis 12:21, he gave the blessing to Isaac, Genesis 28, but they're all buried. The patriarchs are buried in Hebron today. and that's under Muslim rule. Christians can hardly even get in there, I guess. But he's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And of course, his name was changed to Israel. Jerusalem's the capital, mentioned 810 times in the Bible, not once in the Quran. So it's a false claim, that they're occupying the territory.
Well, they call it Al-Quds. They just have a different name for it. And they believe that it's their third holiest site after Mecca and Medina, because that's where allegedly Muhammad went on the flying horse when he went on his night flight.
The furthest temple was kind of a very obscure reference actually to probably to Mecca. But I understand that the word Allah means the chief God, Allah. And Muhammad embraced his tribal god was the moon god, and that's why we have the crescent moon. I think it's pretty revealing. The crescent moon and the sword kind of says it all. But, in Zechariah, and we're living in prophetic times, I do develop a prophetic scenario in my book with eschatology. My degree's in theology, not necessarily in economics, but my favorite subjects are politics, religion, and economics, so it kind of all goes together.
All the things you're not supposed to talk about in polite company.
Yeah.
Chuck's when a real hit at the parties.
Yeah, when I sit to somebody next to me on an airplane, I kind of size them up on the two-hour flight, you know. They ask, they're going to ask me what I do. They want to see a copy of my book. Okay. In Zechariah 12:2, it says, "Behold, I'm going to make Jerusalem a cup that causes reeling to all the people around," that's the Arabs, "and I'll make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all the peoples, and all who lift it up will be severely injured." And this is exactly what we see coming down. Obama, before he left office, just before Christmas, promoted the UN Resolution 2334. I read the document, and it's returning the lines back to pre-1967, basically handing over East Jerusalem and the Temple Mount to the Palestinians. This is where 500,000 Jewish people live, and of course promoting the two-state solution and so on.
Not going to happen. Yeah, it's not going to happen.
And it shouldn't happen. Well, but it's setting up the controversy for what are the Jews going to do, and it's setting up more tension over there for a major war.
Yeah, the Jews will do is they'll say, go to hell. I mean, excuse my bluntness, but that's what they'll say. They will say, whether it's Netanyahu or somebody, a liberal, it doesn't matter. If it's Likud government, it does not matter. The Jews ultimately will never allow Jerusalem to be split again. And just for the sake of our viewer, the West Bank, everyone, you need to remember that the West Bank means from the Jordan River west up into Jerusalem and splitting Jerusalem pretty much down the middle, at least part of Jerusalem. So really, when you hear the West Bank, what you should think is East Jerusalem or East Israel. It's such a teeny little slice of land. There are many of our viewers who are watching right now who drive further than that every day to go to work. Literally, your commute is farther than Jerusalem, Eastern Jerusalem, to the border of the Jordan River. So, by the way, for those of you who might have just joined us on your YouTube channel or who just tuned in on the radio, you have not lost your mind. I'm Randall Terry. Our guest by phone is James Kappas, and the other guest co-host, is Stephen Mencken. We're filling in for Doug and Joe Hagman, who are at the Awaken to the Shaken conference up in the Illinois area. And for some crazy reason, they decided that they were going to trust us to guest host this program.
It's a little bit confusing.
Off into the ditch here.
just gonna fact check a tiny bit, Randall. My middle name is James, but we have Chuck on the line with us. That's the.
What did I say?
James, you're calling me up by my middle
Chuck,
name. It's very creative.
Chuck, please forgive me.
Calling me on my Facebook.
Hey, at least you pronounced.
Kappas, right? Is Kappas a Greek name? That looks Greek to me.
No, it's probably German or something.
Okay.
But thanks for pronouncing it correct.
But yeah. But yeah, Chuck, let's turn back to the econ side of things. All of this is interrelated and it's extremely important. But can you lay out what you see in terms of the United States? I mean, I think it's a good place to start. And this is something that I mentioned in the last hour, talking about demographics in terms of the baby boomers and all these pensions. I know there are plenty of listeners who are in that age group and that demographic. So what can we expect? What should we do? What's going on? Lend us your expertise, please.
Yeah, as your viewers can see on the screen, I suppose, the subtitle of the book is America's Decline, Monetary and Political Decline. And I think they both go together fundamentally. Franz Pick was an economist, and he said the destiny of a nation is the destiny of a nation's currency. They are both one and the same. And I developed this in the book quite a bit, going back to Bretton Woods, the Nixon years and 70s, and how we've been suspended and been on a floating currency, fiat currency, ever since, this whole fractional reserve debt-based system that can't survive. And as we see the decline of the U.S., the Bible indicates that we're going to see the rise of the European Union. This is to be the revived Roman Empire. And that's why I mentioned the Temple Mount and the potential, the growing need for a peace treaty over there someday, which the Bible really mentions, highlights, and the U.S. and EU and the U.N. and Russia are all part of the quartet, and Tony Blair is right in the middle of that. So it's intriguing as that unfolds in my book, and I believe they're going to build the third temple and probably rediscover the Ark of the Covenant and everything else. So that's all fascinating stuff as it unfolds, but it begs the question, what happened to the United States? And I think it's, God forbid, it's an EMP or the North Koreans or something, but I think it's more closely related to our fiscal monetary crisis. You know, a reckoning day means to settle your accounts, your assets and liabilities, and we just have too many unfunded liabilities. I'm a baby boomer, like you, Randall, and it's $200 trillion or more by estimates, and we have a debt ceiling, but we just kicked the can down the road, keep raising it, and in a debt-based economy, all debt, all money is loaned into existence or created out of debt. So that's the simplicity of the monetary system that we have today, and this is why they strove to sneak it in at Jekyll Island. This is in 1907 and back 100 years ago when they created the Federal Reserve, and they did it, you know, very secretively, as you know, Stephen. And so here we are 100 years later, and we're facing a financial reckoning day. It's not going to end very well. You cannot grow yourself out of this. Entitlements are growing at 9% a year, according to Greenspan, and our economic growth in the first quarter was 1.07%. And we think we're going to take the training wheels off of a struggling economy with 100 years of zero interest rates, and that there's a robust economy out there. What concerns me, it wouldn't matter if George Washington was president right now, and I did support Trump because he's a disruptor, and anything was better than the Clinton crime family. But 85% or greater of our annual budget is fixed mandatory spending. So you're not going to you're not going to be able to trim anything, okay? You guys, we have welfare state.
Yeah, and yes, until we deal with the entitlement state, the government as savior, the government as provider, the so-called entitlement programs, mandatory spending, until we deal with that, we will never get our federal budget under control. And I would like to throw out one idea for your listeners and for you as well, because as I'm listening to you, Chuck, I see you are a thinking man's thinker, as is Stephen, and that is that whether America's demise is eschatological or covenantal is in some ways irrelevant. So let's say that Jesus wasn't going to come back for 1,000 years. We're still going to have a day of reckoning because of the quotes that you're making from the books of the laws of Moses. I mean, the law of Moses is what establishes justice and injustice, right and wrong. The borrower is a slave to the lender. America has become a debtor nation, and therefore, if nothing else matters, we're going to have a day of financial reckoning because our fiscal policies are fundamentally evil. They're unjust. We're practicing chicanery. We're literally creating money out of thin air. And it's unjust weights and metals is what the Bible talks about. It says God abhors unjust weights. He hates unjust weights. And that's what we have when we create money out of thin air, and we literally throw away what you referred to as the gold standard or the silver standard, where all money is anchored to real money, not fiat or pretend money or made up money. So the reason I bring that up is because there are many viewers who are watching you and who watch my show regularly that look at the world through an eschatology. Jesus is coming now. But there are some who don't, and I want them to understand, as you've made allusion in your words, that this doesn't have to be about a sign of the times. It can be about a sign of our disobedience and our rebellion to the laws of God.
And it could be all of the above. And so, you know, Chuck, I've heard many different times from people saying, you know, well, the people who are in control of these systems can just keep it going forever, and it'll just keep on blowing up even further and further and further, and so there's nothing to fear, you don't have to worry about it, maybe a not-in-my-lifetime kind of moment. And I just tell them to, you know, wait a while. What would you say to those people?
Well, I would say that there's never been a fiat currency that did not fail. In fact, Voltaire said that all fiat currency eventually returns to its intrinsic value of zero. And this also, that would signal, in the case of the United States, it would render us uncreditworthy.
I'm laughing because when we're taking input from Voltaire, you know that we're in deep doo-doo.
Yeah. You might be right about this one, though. Broken clock.
Right, exactly. Yeah, broken clock is right twice a day.
Yeah, you know, the nature of my business, consulting firm, is IDP Consulting Group. I assist people with precious metals, pure bullion, in various different ways, and they can go to the website there. But we have a fraudulent system. Fiat currencies are inherently corrupt. Washington called it a specie of fraud. James Mason said that anyone who proposed it should be put to death, and so on. This is all part one of my book, where I get into some monetary history. And I guess the fundamental truth that money should be a store of value. And of course, biblical money is gold and silver. Constitutional money is gold and silver, Article 1, Section 8. And so what we have today is unjust scales, which are an abomination to God, in Proverbs 11:1. And even in Amos 8:5, it says they make the shekel heavier and the bushel lighter so as to cheat with dishonest scales. We have a dishonest system that has built-in inflation tax for everybody. It's punitive. And in the end, it collapses the system. So it's how this notion of creating money out of thin air, it just sounds, you know, crazy in a way. But money should be a store of value, should be durable, divisible, scarce, all those qualities that gold and silver have. And that's why J.P. Morgan said that gold and silver is money and everything else is credit. We have a world that is full of credit. I think the McKinsey Global Institute estimates now $250 trillion in sovereign debt and about 300% debt to GDP everywhere. This is not just here. This is Japan. This is Europe. You can see it everywhere.
Yeah.
And it also signals to what, Stephen, you said about a humanitarian crisis when you pull the rug out of entitlements and pension funds, which are now suffering in all 50 states, and they're gambling in the Wall Street casino to find yield because the bond market isn't going to provide it. And we've merely papered over this crisis, and we have 10,000 baby boomers retiring every day for the next 19 years. That doesn't sound very good to me.
I would like, Chuck, you and I have not met face-to-face that either of us can remember, but if you do sell precious metals, I want to encourage all of the viewers to contact you. And if there is a sponsor of the Hagman & Hagman program that also does that, then go there first, friends. But I have no dog in that fight, zero, but I am telling you that every family should have some precious metals set aside, as well as some foodstuffs. There's a verse in the Bible that says, in the Proverbs, that says, the wise man sees danger approaching and prepares for it. The fool passes on and suffers for it. So what Chuck is discussing is a real possibility. And You know, I don't know how much time do we have before the next break.
We're skipping to the bottom of the hour break, Randall, and just a heads up for our viewers as well. We're going right through to 9 o'clock Eastern.
Okay. All right. So if I could put in my two cents and then throw this back to you, Chuck and Stephen. The America's dollar is by international treaty the currency of the world, literally. The IMF, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, all petrol sales, all oil sales are by international law made in dollars. And as you mentioned, that has to do with the Bretton Woods system that was set up at the end of World War II when it was clear that the English pound, the British pound, could no longer serve as the currency of the world.
Right.
And the American leaders and the American bankers, like a drunken teenager, like an arrogant drunken teenager, said, I'm up to the task. I can do this. And for a little while, we could. And then, as you said, the leaving the gold standards, things that happened under Nixon, and now just out of control printing of money puts us all in danger. But the truth of the matter, and Chuck, I want you to tell me if I'm wrong on this, because this is what I say on my show, so now I get to check with an expert. What I tell my viewers is the American dollar is the last to fall because every bank in the world depends on the dollar. We could see the euro collapse. If enough nations pull out of the European Union, you know, England stayed on the pound, so they were not a threat to the euro. But if we have France or Italy or some of these nations start to pull out, that currency could collapse. And that's the only even remote competitor to the dollar. So if we were going to go into a worldwide economic collapse or some type of worldwide economic meltdown, such as hyperinflation, the dollar is going to be the currency of flight. It's going to be where everyone runs to, which will give it for a season a false sense of, okay, we're going to be okay because everyone wants the dollar. Am I right, wrong, somewhere in there?
No, that's a great observation, by the way. 60% of currency reserves in the world, and used to be 90% or greater, is now in the dollar, but the euro has been catching up with that as well. And the U.S., because the U.S. bond market is so liquid and the dollar is the reserve currency, it would be the last to go down. We even see that right now with dollar strength at all, you know, pretty high right now because it's a traditional
flight to safety. Right, the euro is not doing well against the dollar. Yep. Okay, so
yeah,
okay, I just wanted to not think that I'm telling my viewers something wrong here.
No, and that's interestingly though, that is the duopoly. It used to be the mark and the dollar and so on, but the mark, you know, the Germans pretty much dominate
the mark, the pound, and the dollar. Yeah, the British pound.
Mm-hmm. And that was replaced in 2002. That was replaced in the SDR, which we might have time to get into. Which is probably the solution to the reserve currency problem in the world right now. As Jim Rickards says, and he's written several books, The Death of Money and others. In fact, the subtitle there is The Coming Collapse of the International Monetary System. And we've had crises before, 1907, 1933, 1971. This is going to be one of those times where they bring, and in this case it looks like the IMF, to manage a very unstable system, and he likens it to an avalanche in piling on snow, that the whole monetary system is unstable, and at some point it's going to come crashing down. And I'm always asked, well, when do you think this will happen? And I think at the moment that people lose confidence in the system, and right now I think you mentioned the Canadian bank, the mortgage banks up there. They've lost 78% of their deposits in 1 week, people. This can happen very fast because they consider your asset put in the bank as a liability that they owe you because they loaned it out. That's the essence of a fractional reserve system that they found themselves in. So, you know,
if I could jump in with one other thought, because, again, for solutions, I want to be honest to my own advice, or at least I want to follow my own advice. I don't sell gold and silver. I don't sell food. So my wife and I and other family members and friends, we have these discussions constantly because we're worried. You know, we're human and we watch what's going on. And so what I tell her is, look, we have extended family members and friends who are farmers and farm literally, literally tens of thousands of acres. They're still going to grow wheat. They're still going to grow corn. They're still going to grow soy. The issue becomes, if there was a true crisis, it's going to come down to who's growing food and who has diesel fuel, because you have to move food. Everything that we see in a grocery store is trucked. It's brought in, almost all of it, on 18-wheelers that use diesel fuel, and the food is brought out of the fields with farm machinery that runs on diesel fuel. So you've got, are farmers still growing food? Does diesel fuel still exist? And the answer to both of those, unless there is something that's beyond the pale of imagination, those things are going to continue. They're going to keep growing food. The sun will come up, and there will be diesel fuel. So the question isn't that. The question is, what happens in Detroit, in Los Angeles, in Chicago, in name your major city, when the grocery stores go for 4 days or 3 weeks without a proper amount of food? That's the crisis that will become unmanageable, untenable, unpredictable. You know, when people literally pour out of the major cities because they're literally in search of food or they're panicking. And then that's why we come back. There's the old expression, the left and the right meet in the woods. That we meet in the woods, where your left-wing conspiracy people and your right-wing conspiracy people, or the people that are afraid of big government, we meet in the woods where we say, do you have guns? Do you have silver and gold? Do you have food? Do you have a little bit of fuel put aside so you can drive somewhere if you need to? And again, Chuck, I'm going to run this by you and Steve, because you're an economist. This is the advice that I'm giving to people, that if we take simple measures, if my family could not leave our home for 2 or 3 weeks because of some horrible thing that happened in a nearby city, we're going to be fine. We've got the ability to drink water. We've got food. We've got propane fuel. We're going to be fine. And if somebody comes to our house to try and rob us, we're still going to be fine because we're heavily armed. Remember, if you've got food and you don't have weapons, you're what's called an involuntary food pantry. So yeah. I'll close my mouth and ask you guys if I'm right or wrong on this.
No, well, you're right, Randall. And, of course, I live in the high country of Arizona here. I know a lot of farmers here and everything, and kind of settled in. And I refer in my book to the four G's, God, guns, gold, and groceries. Or gasoline and girls, gear, could add some things. Could get expensive.
I've got a good girl. I'm good. I've got a good girl.
Okay. And a good dog. Yeah, okay. So the four G's, be prepared. I'm a Boy Scout. You know, it wasn't raining when Noah built the ark. That's what Warren Buffett said. We're just trying to be prudent here. And frankly, what you said about the prudent see evil coming and they hide themselves from it. I often quote that, and it says the naive proceed and pay the penalty. They're going to really pay the penalty when you realize that $24 trillion in 401 pension funds, IRAs, and annuities, and less than 1.3% is allocated in gold and silver by any means of a hedge. Why do you think the Chinese are buying all the gold in the world? Why do you think banks are net buyers of gold since 2010? And even J.P. Morgan is reported to be sitting on 600 million ounces of physical silver as they're one of the commercial shorts at Crimex rigging the markets. And this price suppression action, just this week, we've had 12, 13 days drop in the metals index. I have people calling up and smartly saying, man, I got to get more. Because, you know, it's inevitable.
Chuck, just to jump in here real quick, I just grabbed some more silver today. I honestly couldn't let it go down.
Hmm? What's silver trading at right now?
The paper was at like $16.30 an ounce. Wow. It's down a couple bucks from the 1850 levels a couple weeks ago. But yeah, it's just straight line down with no fundamentals to it. So, you know, if you're not aware that the precious metals markets are manipulated and kept under control for the sake of preserving the system as long as possible, then, well, you know, time to get up to speed. There's no explanation for this action other than, you know, straight line naked shorts where they're selling contracts for silver that they don't have. you know, JP Morgan has an awful lot of silver. I would believe that, Chuck, but they also have a lot of shorts. So we'll see where the dust settles, but it's really difficult because if you buy into something, and this applies sort of very generally, if you make a decision, particularly a big decision, that decision can come with regret. And so the primary thing that you need to do is not take my word for it. I couldn't even log on to the show at the top of the first hour. So don't believe me. You should probably believe Chuck because his book is chock full of information. You can tell just from hearing him talk. He has all this stuff off the top of his head. Extremely knowledgeable, extremely experienced, and available to speak with you and to take your calls and to answer some questions about these if you have them. So I consult with him first before you come to me, but the point is you have to do your homework on anything. Because if you're a casual holder of silver, like, oh, well, it's going to go down and the government's going to go down and the system's going to collapse and silver's going to skyrocket. And then 6 months later, you see some price action that works against you. Well, that's going to create a tremendous emotional burden and you're going to get flushed out at the bottom because you can't take it anymore. That's the weak hand flush that has to happen before the moonshot can take place. And so, you know, if we see North Korea go hot, man, this stuff can get out of control really quickly. And you kind of see what would be taking place, at least potentially, in the precious metals by looking at Bitcoin. I mean, that was at 1,200 last week, got up to about 1,670 earlier today before selling off a little bit, got a little bit out of control. But, you know, I'm holding on to all that stuff, but the priority would be silver after you've got the rest of your 4 G's in order. What do you think, Chuck?
Yeah, well, great comments there, Stephen, as always. The Bible says the love of money is the root of all evil. It was the money changers that really conspired to kill Jesus because he was upsetting the Forex currency exchanging there in the Pharisee-run, kickback system. And he overturned the tables, Mark 14. I would love to have seen that scene. And I refer to the banksters as the money changers in my book for that very reason, just to know who our enemies are. These people, they've really sold their soul out. You can't serve God and mammon because you'll love one and despise the other. And they rule the casinos, the canyons on Wall Street, the movie The Big Short, I mean, spelled it out. It was a great movie if you saw it. And the stock market right now is at bubble levels, 30-to-1 PE ratios, and the velocity of money's down back to 1929 levels. We're in a bond super cycle. This is scaring the heck out of Bill Gross, says he can't sleep at night. That jig is up, so that's going no bid. And so there's a lot of risk out there. It's a black swan, a rogue event. We don't know what it's going to be. If confidence is eroded, and you, for example, if you had a banking contagion and counterparty risk, let's take Deutsche Bank, for example. They have $66 trillion in notional derivatives. 80% of that is interest rate sensitive. In fact, that goes for all the rest of the 500 million. Right. The bankers are trapped, and they know it. They can't raise the rates. They're going to raise their own fee for national debt, right? They're going to raise their own servicing of the debt, and that's called financial repression. GordonTLong.com, he does great work on that if you want to check him out, but that needs to be understood, why the rates are so low and will stay. They'll take baby steps, but they're probably going to return to QE. And this goes back to financialization in the 1980s. Financialization is a term, refers to a pattern of accumulation in which profit making occurs increasingly through financial channels rather than through trade and commodity production or manufacturing. We're a nation of pushing papers and stuff. You know, we've outsourced all our manufacturing and all of our jobs. This is why Trump was so popular. But that's not coming back. That's been hollowed out for 40 years. And that's Trump is really just about 20 years and $20 trillion too late. And I, there was a study done by Professor Joseph Taner. He wrote a book called The Collapse of Complex Societies. He's a professor at Utah. And Rickards even talks about complexity theory. But what Taner was saying, and he studied the ancient Roman Empire, that by the 3rd century, they had exhausted themselves because they had so much committed to wars and mercenary soldiers and heavy taxation. And he said this. He says, as the state becomes more complex, think about the U.S., The increase in complexity requires more effort to maintain the status quo. Eventually, the marginal returns from investment in complexity levels declines, and the marginal costs stay the same or even increase. The only way central authorities can go on is through taxation, heavy taxes, or currency debasement. And there you have it. So it's like nothing new under the sun, right? Here we are.
Yeah. For those of you who tuned into the YouTube channel and you're wondering why these three handsome guys, at least two of them are handsome, why we are on the air.
Thanks Father a lot, and son.
No, I was saying that you two guys are the good-looking ones. the Hagman father and son team, Doug and Joe, are at the Awaken to the Shaken convention up in the Chicago area, and they asked Steve and I to guest host, and Steve has asked Chuck Kappas to come on as a guest, and so that is why you are hearing and seeing us. This is nothing other than an opportunity for us to get together and hang out and talk together and hopefully provide some interesting information to you, and maybe just to put a little flame under some people's hind ends and hope for more than pot roast, butt roast. I blew the line.
That's okay. We'll step in here with the shameless plug. Hey, hey Chuck, how can people connect with you and get your book?
Well, thanks. It's featured on your site there, I believe. Also, they can go to chuckkappas.com. CoPPES.com, and I have a 2-for-1 offer there right now. If they order a book, I'll sign a copy, throw in a DVD I did, a lecture, some other free stuff there, and also encourage people to sign up for my free newsletter. It's about 20 pages every month. It's free. I put a lot of work into it because I'm a news junkie, and I might as well share it since I'm studying news all day long and try to put things in perspective, especially the markets and how distorted everything is. So it's a full-time job to do that, and if I can assist people with precious metals area, my business website is also linked there, but it's idpconsultinggroup.com. So appreciate that, and be glad to get a copy of my book out to people if they're interested. 2 copies, actually, for one.
That's awesome, Chuck. Thank you for that. And I would definitely encourage all of our audience to avail yourselves of it. It's a wealth of knowledge, like we were saying. And, you know, you can get in touch with Chuck and is happy to speak with you. So, Chuck, we talk about the inevitability of the change or the collapse or however you want to term it. The monetary system as it's currently structured has to end because it can't last forever. And that's a mathematical and historical certainty. So, can you talk a little bit about what that could potentially look like on the other side? You know, we have this period of relative chaos that's of indeterminate value that we need to prepare for, indeterminate length, rather. But what's coming on the other side? What kind of signals are you picking up? What can you tell us from your experience is the most likely set of potential outcomes here?
It's a great question. We have to follow what the monetary authorities are doing, and I'm now speaking of the IMF, the Bank of International Settlements in Basel, and elsewhere. In fact, consider the fact that India, they banned the 500 and 1,000 rupee notes to drive that out. Those were mostly used to purchase gold, so they're trying, and they put a tariff on gold, so they're trying to, and this directive came down from the BIS, they're trying to discourage gold ownership there, and also to drive people into a digital or cashless society, which is kind of crazy because you have a lot of people living in poverty who don't have smartphones, although they do have about 1 or 2 kilos of gold. It's estimated that 80% of the Indian people have that much gold. And we have a saying in my business that wealth is never destroyed, wealth is transferred. And if you are in a place to benefit from the from a transfer of wealth, then the Indian people and some Chinese might be buying Arizona real estate here pretty soon, and Canadian real estate, more of it, because there'll be a transfer of wealth. And especially what's interesting about India, and there's a reason why I'm bringing this up to answer your question, but that needs to be put into perspective because they are now shifting to a demand for silver, which is very dynamic. In other words, if you're going to put tariffs on gold and punish us, we're just going to get silver. And they buy $25 billion a year. And that would be a little bit more than all the available silver available for investment in the world today. At 72-to-1 ratio, silver is the most undervalued asset in the world, and I have a bunch of it. And I think people should have allocate more to silver, 80% silver or 90, than gold, because of the upside potential, and it's more practical, Randall, as you would expect, if you're going to be bartering and that sort of thing. But I see real potential there, and I write about that in my newsletters. But it's a war on cash, and that's also something that concerns me in my industry, is because I deal in cash equivalents, privacy, a discrete asset. They want you all in the banking system so that they can affect negative rates. Have you ever heard anything crazier than negative interest rates? And also bank bail-ins, which is a very serious threat to people, because there's only $25 billion in the FDIC to cover $9.5 trillion on deposits in the M2. So I would lower your exposure to the risk.
I love discussions like this. My only regret is that the three of us aren't in a room together, because the dynamic would be a little bit easier for all of us, because we, you know, I don't even have a monitor. I'm listening in my ear, but I can't see either of you. And it would be fun if we had a round table, but again, I'm so thrilled to the Hagmans for letting us do this. That was a very long way of me saying that I forgot what it was that I was going to say. Oh, it's the question you asked, Steve, of where do we see this going? That's a game that we play here constantly. And I'm interested in what the two of you have to say, because I've read some of the books and the materials that you're talking about, Chuck, as far as when nations go from being a manufacturing to a service industry base, and the collapse of the Danes as a world economic power, etc. But what we have today is unprecedented, and I can't figure out how it fits, but I know it does, and that is bread and circuses. The dynamic that we have today that is different, and there's no precedent. If you look at the Great Depression, we did have cars, but they weren't fast. We did not have an interstate system. We did not have a really vibrant airplane system. We had radios. We had no TV. We had no internet, no computers, no smartphones. So the dynamic of human interaction today, because of the speed of travel, the speed of communication, and the literally inexhaustible resource of evil, pornography, games, the just incessant ability to go and to find information. The circuses, you know, the Roman government kept the plebeians, kept the people at rest and at bay by providing bread and circuses. And we have, we still have a dollar menu, for goodness sake, with everything else that's gone on, we still have a dollar menu at our fast food restaurants, and we have more circuses than we could enjoy to the end of human history. So I don't know, as long as people get their fix of bread and circuses, and I mean, what would happen if we had a severe economic downturn?
Oh, boy. Well, it's the kind of stuff that keeps me awake, because when that occurs, there's probably likely a degradation of our civil liberties in this environment, overall environment we're living in. And it's all been encouraged by an institutionalized welfare and warfare state Ron Paul's tried to warn us about. They do have a sign in the national parks, and it says, "Do not feed the bears. They'll show up at your town hall meeting." And we're hearing that. And so this has been institutionalized, the welfare state, the entitlements, structural unemployment in America, the pension risk concerns me quite a bit. I'm going to probably write my next newsletter on that a bit. And you remember Francis Schaeffer? He talked about the culture wars, and he warned about, as we degrade prenatal life, we will degrade postnatal life. The elderly,
right?
The people who can't, who are living too long. Doris Day just lived till 93. John Glenn, 95, David Rockefeller, 101. Of course, he had about 3 heart transplants. But, you know, it was the Social Security system was built around the entitlements for, well, they were hoping that men would all die before they got their benefits, right? and now it's, we're just living too long. So that's a serious matter. I'm not on Social Security. I might take it next year. I may never need it, or may never see it for that matter. But the other side of this is going to be something that's going to have to be managed on a social level, but on a monetary level, there will emerge.
When you say
a new
social
system.
Level, when you say social level, do you mean like the church stepping up to the plate, the Christian community working together, as opposed to a governmental solution?
I wish that would be the case more, but we've created a very dependent class, and if people are acting badly now, misbehaving now, what will they do in a hard time? In Luke 23:31, it says, if they do this in the green tree, what will they do in the dry tree? And the Lord was talking about how he was being crucified, and they were doing this kind of evil, you know, when they didn't even have. I did a paper in Bible college on the decline of Jerusalem in 70 AD by the Romans and how bad it got. That was the dry tree. That's how bad things can get. So, look, I'm a Boy Scout. I just like being prepared. We need to have a contingency plan. We need to be shrewd as serpents and innocent as doves, because we're out like sheep in the midst of wolves. And, you know what democracy is, 2 wolves and a sheep deciding what's for dinner.
Right. Hey, Chuck, we're about to go to break. Can you stay with us on the other side of the hour?
Yeah, we probably should, because I wanted to address Robert Triffin and where this really is going, where it's really going.
All right. All right, let's do it. Thanks so much. This is Stephen Mencking with Randall Terry, Chuck Coppas, IDP Consulting Group, and ChuckCoppas.com. We'll see you on the other side.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 Days in the Belly of the Beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, danielholdings.com. That's danielholdings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high net worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.